Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning. Can I have it one more time? Good morning, guys. Good morning. Wow, that's perfect. Okay. First of all, thank you for coming to the session at 9 a.m. Apparently, you must be interested in security. Yes, that's good. It's a pretty early time in the morning, but I will make sure that we're going to have a lot of excitement during this presentation because it's related with credentials. Couple of words about myself before we move on and before I will explain what we're going to be talking about within the presentation. What am I doing and so on. So from the speaking perspective, I like to speak a lot, actually. And last year, I was honored to be a number one speaker at Ignite. But to me, it means one thing. It doesn't mean that I'm a good speaker. It means that security is a very important subject. And apparently, that's why that thing happened. And basically, what I do for a living is penetration testing and something that basically people call hacking. And in our team, we call it researching. I've been doing this for the past 13 years. Working within the different types of environment, enterprises, also medium, small companies, checking out if you can hack inside. I also have access to the source code of Windows, but not to the whole part. That's why security research, it's still exciting, because there's plenty of things to discover. Our session today is going to be related with all the interesting ways how credentials are stored on the disk, for example, and how we are able to get access to them. The reason why we are doing this session like this is because we've been asked so many different questions, how this works, how that works, in terms of credentials. That's why it would be fantastic if this was the last time I'm talking about it, and if we clarify all the details and stories that are behind credentials. For now, a little call for action. If you have found like a little card on your seat, I prepared a little security quiz. I challenge you all. And if you're interested in security, just have fun. That's it. And average is 13 questions. So I'm really interested how Ignite is doing in security. So on average right now, we've got about 1,500 people that did the quiz. So do not hesitate. Just move on. Anyway, let's start this session with a little story. The story is like this. Basically, within our team, we do different kinds of tests. One of those tests is social engineering. And for an unknown reason, I'm the person that does this. And basically, what we were doing is a social engineering at one of our customers. And that particular customer was in the building where there are a bunch of floors, but the customer was spread across floor number 6, 7, and 8. And I wanted to get inside. That was a part of the project. So what was interesting is that there were like 3 points of entry, and I had to figure out from the social engineering perspective how to do it. So the first point of entry was kind of easy. This is something that we do every day. It's called tailgating. So there was this opening door, and either I got a pin, or I've got a cart, or I just stick to some nice guy's back, and I go inside into the elevator, and that's exactly what I did. So next stage, it was also quite interesting, because there were like 2 elevators, elevator A and B, and in between them, you had to put the pin to say like which floor you want to go to. So let's say floor number 6, yes? But basically, I was waiting for someone to come over to press appropriate floor number. So I used the female factor, because apparently female, they have like big bags and they don't even know like what is inside and they're looking for all these things and so on. So I'm sorry guys, but I'm not afraid to use this argument when it's about social engineering. So I took my backpack and I was like searching for a couple of things and so on at the same time, watching if there is someone pressing the floor number. And there was a guy, kind of handsome. Good. Not that I have got, have a husband, but it's just my job. Yes. So basically, what was the story is that when the elevator opened, I jumped immediately to the backside of the elevator for a reason. The door closed, and we are going to the certain floor. Now, if you're wondering if we had like a little chat with this guy, well, absolutely we did. He actually had a very nice cologne. So I was like, what kind of cologne you are wearing? Yes. And he was like, Hugo Boss or something. And the reason why I ask, actually, just for information, and I know you will understand because you are geeks, is because I felt like a little flavor of the new hard drive, you know what I mean? Like this kind of... So long story short, when we get to the certain floor and the door opened, after this very nice chat, this guy is a gentleman. So what he did the pick with his card, he opened the door and he said, ladies first. Yeah? So nice to be a gentleman at the end. I was very happy, obviously. I went to this company, and this was a trader's company. So when the traders finish their transaction, they eat up lunch, they go out for lunch, quite a long lunch, and they didn't lock their desktops, which might sound quite surprising, but they really don't care about that. So what I did, I sat on one of these guys' chairs, and I started to pull out credentials from their browsers. Because effectively, if user can use his credentials saved within the browser, if the user is logged on, that means these credentials are mine. So what's the summary over here is that anyone could do it, what I did, even a pizza person. But from the moment you are sitting in front of the computer, that's where the knowledge starts, and that we were supposed to know how we are able to pull out the credentials. So starting the session, first of all, let's define credentials. Credentials is something, some data, that we use in order to define who we are and to prove who we are against some other entity. So the other entity needs to believe who we are, believe who we are. Credential doesn't have to be username and password. It can be something else. It can be really a certificate. It can be some certain type of data. So question is, how this data is actually stored? So everything in operating system, putting this in a technical frame, depends on something that is called a boot key. Boot key is to be found in a registry. Boot key actually consists of the class names from the registry hive, which is system, and then you get into the details. Boot key is very important because it's used to encrypt different types of data in operating system. For example, starting with the SAM database or NTDSO did on the Active Directory level, but also things like LSA secrets, which represents passwords for the service accounts. It could be even, and this is quite interesting, the machine.acc name, which represents as a computer password that computer uses to authenticate within the network. By the way, I don't know if you knew, but computer password is the password of the local system account. Local system has the same password as computer account. So basically, if you're wondering what's that, by grabbing the computer account, you are able to get access to the local system account. And that information is also stored in the registry. The last one that is pretty interesting, MSDCC2, I call it MSDCC2, but effectively, this is something that we call cached credentials. Cached credentials are very special type of logon data, not necessarily credentials, which allows us to log on when the domain controller is not available. So when they are saved in the registry, the question of the universe is, are cached credentials actually safe? And whenever we are thinking about this, well, I think I should pull out this slide to explain cache credentials a little bit, because this is a value that is stored within the registry in the security cache. And question is it really possible to extract hashes from that value? Well, let's have a look. First of all, in the left bottom corner in the blue, you see the function. This function is called pbkdf2. pbkdf2, in short words for now, what it does, it actually uses something that is called DCC1. DCC1, it's a function that relies on the username and user's password's hash. So the username and the hash. And after that, we've got DCC1, and this is the input value of the function, pbkdf2, that runs for 10,240 times iterations, and that's what creates us the MSDCC2, so the cache logons, which are actually stored in the registry, additionally in the encrypted form. So in the Windows XP, just a little comment, I know it was a long time ago, but just to make you a background, that data wasn't really MSDCC2. So it was just one iteration, DCC1. So it was very easy to pre-calculate rainbow tables, so the list of that value and the passwords of the user. And the whole value is encrypted in the registry by using RC4. And we could be thinking, well, maybe this is not perfect. How it is right now, though. So from Windows Vista, Microsoft introduced that particular algorithm, so MSDCC2 as a value, being encrypted with AS128 in the registry, but having this 10,240 more iterations. That's quite interesting, because we can definitely see the level of complexity here. But who really cares about that? If it's RC4 or if it's AS encrypting this value in the registry, if the key is in the registry. System somehow needs to be able to know what kind of logon data you provide to be able to compare whatever you provided with what is in the registry anyway, right? So long story short, RC4 or AS, we don't care. But what we care is MSDCC2, so the PBKDF2 function that I was talking about, and the level of complexity it provides. If you are working in the governmental organization or organization that really cares about different types of parametrization for cryptography, you can still change that so that it is effectively not 10,240 iterations, but you can increase this value. So when you're going to be logging on, there's going to be an algorithm that's going to run that amount of iterations of your username and password, so effectively later on hash. And it's going to compare of what we've got within the registry. Then you're going to be logging on when the domain controller is not available. Now, when you increase the value, what does it mean? It means, simply speaking, that you will be, at that certain stage, having the password pre-calculated a little bit, this value pre-calculated a little bit longer. Yes, that's the only thing that we've got over here. How much longer? Not that much, actually, taking into consideration our CPUs, which are quite good. But this is something to be reconsidered. Ready for the first demo? Yes, good. So let's dig in. The first demo is going to be about usage of the cached credentials or cached logons. I shouldn't maybe even be saying credentials. I only say it because we all say it this way. But effectively, as I already mentioned, we call it MSDCC2. So what's the story? The story is that this is Freddy, and Freddy has access to the domain. And this is the regular account. Yeah, Freddy Krueger. I usually use this account. You never know if it's a good or bad one, yes? So this time, it's going to be the bad account. OK, so let's dig in. What I will do, I will show you two things. First of all, I will show you that Freddy is a normal person, yes? He has data, username, and password saved in this time in the Chrome. Yes, it can be anything, Firefox, Internet Explorer, doesn't really matter here. So this is the password that we can spot. And it's normal situation. I want to basically show you how first I'm logging onto the domain, even though it's not a very exciting situation. What I would like to show you is the password that I'm using to log on. And at that stage, let me show you, this is a password p@ and so on. It's a password. So I will log on with this one, and this one works, OK? This is a domain access. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to restart this box. And in order to simulate user traveling, so logging on with the cache logons, yes, I will simulate lack of network. The reason why I will do it offline, it's to make the picture clear, because I really care so that you understand at the end, because it's a pretty complex situation what's going to happen in a moment, OK? So user is traveling right now. So user will be logging on with the cached data. When we go next, and we do repair your computer, indeed, we're going to repair a little bit. So troubleshoot, advanced options, command prompt. At that little stage, I have no impact on the font size, so let me just enlarge it a little bit. I will use this opportunity as well to disconnect the user from the network, so that's the whole situation. Apply, OK, very good. And then I will move on to the toolkit where I will, what? Change the cached logon data. Question is, can we override it? Can we do something about it? For now, we know that we cannot decrypt it because it's using the hashing function. But if we cannot decrypt it, then why don't we just override it? Yes, so absolutely we can do it. And for now, we know already that in Windows Vista Plus, it's stored using AS128. But effectively, this is something that we don't care because we are able to decrypt these values from the registry anyway. OK, guys, so we are ready to go. Let's dig in. So the first thing that we're going to do is to run Mimikatz, this is our secure edition, which is not recognized by antivirus. And I will do LSA dump cache. And then I will specify here what I would like to get the information from. It's going to be Windows, System32, config. I have to type it, unfortunately. Systemd, Windows, System32, config, security, / Kiwi to override the cache credential data. Enter. Lovely. We see over here, we can spot that this is indeed Freddy's data that was cached, also an administrator. So this is all good. We have overwritten the cache logons right now. Let's bring it on, continue, and let's see what kind of result we're going to get. So this is exceptionally interesting because the question is, OK, A, will we be able to log on with some different passwords? B, what if we do it like this? Is it still possible to get access to the user's secrets? Yes? So let's see. Right now, user is logging on to the domain. And let me show you the password. Right now, I'm logging on to the domain with a different password, which is Mimikatz. Why not? Let's see if it works. So right now, this is working due to the fact that we know the function, we know the algorithm, and we are able to overwrite the cache logons. This is not a local account. This is a domain account. Yes? It's a different story. Are you with me? Yes, very good, very good. OK, so now probably you're excited to see if we are able to get access to the secrets, right? So when we go to the Chrome pass, that takes a little while. And at the moment, we're going to see, of course, if it's possible or not. And this is actually a pretty interesting thing, because what is happening right now, we are checking for the solution that is called Data Protection API that allows us to encrypt or decrypt user secrets. So as you can spot over here, password is not here. So we are kind of on a safe page, because we can see that that particular browser secret depends on the current user's password. And because I provided a different password, I'm not able to get access to this data. OK, so is it really like this? Well, probably you will not be here, and I wouldn't be here if, of course, this wasn't possible, right? So a couple of words at the very beginning. This is a hardcore subject. That's why, by the way, you saw the smoked brain at the front slide of the presentation. Let's move on. So Data Protection API, what's that? Well, in a short words, this is a set of system functions that were designed by Microsoft to provide security and privacy of data on the Windows machines. It's a pretty good mechanism. It's actually a very good mechanism because it relies, as I already mentioned, on your password. So if your password changes in an illegal way, like I did, for example, then someone doesn't have an access to secrets. Yeah? So in case of an offline access, yes, this is something that we are not pretty much getting access to the user's secrets unless, in a case of a local account, we manage to break the hash from the SAM database. Whenever we are thinking about this and how it works, what I would like to present to you is basically how we are able to decrypt the user's secrets even though we don't know the password. And that's quite exciting, because this is something that our team was working for over 6 months. So that kind of paints a big picture of how dangerous a couple of things might be. Okay, so let's see. We've got this Freddy over here. Couple of words of explanation regarding the Data Protection API. Freddy's secrets, percent up data, percent. Let me go to Microsoft. Let me go to Protect. And that's it. Freddy's secrets rely on these things here. These things here, it's nothing but something that we call master key containers. And master key containers, so these files, contain master keys, OK? Master keys are the ones that can encrypt different secrets. For example, asymmetric keys that we can, for example, use within the certificate, so our private keys, but also our browser's passwords. Yes, depends how it was implemented by the developer. But everything starts here. If you're going to delete this folder, you are in trouble. Like, really. Yes? So basically, what would be the interesting part to find out is which of these master key containers contains a key that will decrypt the secret, so the password stored by the Freddy in the browser. And as you already see, I have one marked over here, but I don't have the current user password to decrypt it. So what's wrong? Ah, here comes the second thing. Because master key containers contains second key, the one that is not encrypted with our hash, but the one that is encrypted by the, and this is quite interesting, public key from the domain. Now, what's the public key from the domain? This is this, BK secure. So what the hell is this? Like, how could it be that the public key in the domain is encrypting my data? So wait a sec, who has a private key? Huh? So whoever has private key is able to decrypt everybody's data? That's kind of sad, isn't it? Well, not everything needs to be pretty in this world. Let's move on. So what we're going to do, we will actually extract at that point the private key from the domain in order to extract people's data, okay? So what am I right now on? It's a domain controller. And I have here, again, the Mimikatz Secure Edition set up. So what I need to do is privilege debug, yes, to be able to talk to local security authority subsystem. And then what we're going to do, it's an LSA dump backup keys export. That command allows me to extract, and that's what we have found out, extract the private key from the domain controller's memory. Let's see. We got it. Extracted. Now let me do quit, exit, not quit, start dot, and let's see. This is this. So we've got here DER. DER, it's not a private key container, but I want to open it up to show you how it works. What's the whole point? And well, we will be able to see, of course, what kind of key is this? Is it trusted? Is it valid, invalid, expired? So that's kind of dodgy, don't you think? Like a CA certificate, it's not trusted, issued to nobody, by nobody, issued in 2012, it's valid for 1 year, it's not like renewed, so what's happening? Well, who cares? Mathematically, it's okay, right? So when you have, and everybody in their domain controllers, you have the same stuff. By the way, it's not a demo or something. Yeah, you've got the same stuff up and working. So what I did already, let's dig in over here. I have in my tools, let's open up the Freddy's console. Sorry, CD disk tools, very good. I have already copied the certificate, yes, to make demo fluent. So that certificate from the domain controller allows us for the following. First of all, I will calculate the current user's password hash because I will be decrypting these master keys with the PFX and encrypting them again with my password so that I'm able to get access to my secrets. That's the whole procedure. Have a look. First of all, my password right now, it's Mimikatz. So this is the hash that I will be using. It's an NT hash. Windows uses MD4s. So that's the one. Now, I will run CQ, in this case, master key AD. And this is the tool that is written by our developer, Michael. And it takes the following parameters, PFX, file, and new hash. So this is kind of easy. Let's dig in. So we've got our master first hash calc, master key AD. That's the one. PFX, we got it. New hash. I'm going to take it from here, since I have it already here, bank. And then file, which represents us, the master key over here that is used to encrypt Freddy's secrets. Right-click, copy as path, and thank you. Enter. What happens right now is that that particular master key is being decrypted by the PFX from the domain. So I got a new one created over here. So what I will do, this one I will rename to dot old, enter, and this AD modifier I will rename like this, punk, 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 enter, yes, I have it. Now, you might spot at that stage that is actually not marked as system file, so that's exactly what I need to do right now. Set up the attributes, I have a command already ready here that I just need to run, and that's it, yes? So this key has been right now marked as system and hidden. Now the moment of truth, okay? So we've got here password, let's refresh it, and as you can see, domain admin right now get access into person's secret. Let's summarize it. Thank you. That's just the beginning, by the way, but thank you. So basically, what happened is that domain admin is the person that can do a lot. We all know that. But proving this, it can do even more. It means that if someone has access to the domain controller's data, offline, backups, disk, whatever, or someone is a domain admin, this person could not only mess up with the whole domain, but also with the people's privacy. So what you need to be careful is who is obviously a domain admin within this your infrastructure. So this is a little bit of a summary. Now, question of the universe is, what about KeePass? Is KeePass safe? Is it something that we should really care about? Absolutely. This is what I would like to show you. Data protection API taken further, what do we mean is that if we have already access at that point to the people's secrets, we are able to decrypt the people's databases and so on. Let's dig in and let me prove it to you. So what we're going to be doing over here is this. So I got a certain user, and that certain user is logged on over here. I'm just going to take this machine out. Okay. So this is our Freddy, and Freddy will open up. So do you want to automatic check, disable, open up, and create the KeePass database. So we are creating here the new database. Let's call it CQ Base 1, for example, save. And it's not protected by master password, which is, by the way, a very good option because it's here, yes? But if you do it Windows user account, that relies on the data protection API. So in such situation, people having this within the domain, their passwords from KeePass, are they still decryptable? Let's see. So we've got here user Windows user account, CQ base 1. Let's do that. Fine. So we've got here some passwords. Yes, we can save it. This is our database. Question is, can someone open it up? Absolutely. So what we're going to be doing here is I will, at that stage, try to open this database as like a different user. I got, for example, even domain admin, yes? So we could do that. I'm going to log on with the password. And I will try to get access to Freddy's data, yes? So this is something that is interesting for me. So there's a couple of things that I at that point I need. First of all, I need to get access to C users, F Krueger, here we go. And then I need to get access to app data, roaming. I got here KeePass, and this is this protected user key bin. That's the key that encrypts the database. I'm going to copy it. Copy into, let me get here, C analysis, Control V. The next thing I need, it's the Freddy's database. So from Freddy Krueger, he saved it on the desktop. This is the CQ base. The one more thing that I'm going to copy is something that you probably use, is that Freddy as well, it's using Remote Desktop Connection Manager. Who knows Remote Desktop Connection Manager? Your hands up. Okay, almost everybody I see. Okay, so this is something that allows us to manage remote desktop usernames and passwords in one tool. Lovely. So if you save over there your username and password to connect to the servers, that also applies under this story, okay? Just to tell you. So let's copy this stuff, and I'm going to paste it into my C analysis data. Lovely. And in order to get access to that, I've got here a bunch of tools. Let me quickly enlarge the font so the guys in the back can also spot it. Very cool. So what is out there? First of all, what I will be using, it's something that we already know. It's a master key. So I got here a master key of Freddy Krueger. I have previously decrypted it. So I've got it, and it's in the form of the text file, like this. So this is the master key, one of these master keys that you already saw, but decrypted. So what we're going to do, first of all, what is interesting is that KeePass, when encrypting data, it's using entropy. Entropy is like a little variable that we can put over here to encrypt the data. Yes, we can always list it, and that's what I did. The tool that I use, it's a CQDP API KeePass DB Decryptor.exe. You must admit that our developer is very creative in creating names. This is all very user-friendly. Apparently, we need to send him for the user-friendly training or something. Anyway, so this is the first stage. Second stage is that I got over here CQ DPAPI blob decryptor. And this is the tool that we use to decrypt the password that encrypts KeePass. So it takes three parameters, master key, which we have, entropy, which we have, blob, which is the key that I've just put out from the user's profile, all stuff we have. So let's begin. CQDPAPI, blob decryptor. So we've got master, we can do it even like this. And when we go to our stuff, let me put it up a little bit so that we've got here. This is our master key, home, shift, end, control C. We got it. Now, the second stuff, it's entropy. And entropy we also have over here. Let's go to the front. This is the value, control C. Perfect. And then we need to specify our blob. And our blob is in C, analysis. And this is this master per protected user key bin. Lovely. So what we have right now is that this value over here is the password that encrypts the KeePass database. I already have it in a clipboard, but I can also put it over here. So the next stage we need to perform is to do CQ KeePass tool, where we specify the key and the file. So in our case, it's going to be slash K, and we provide the key, slash F to provide the C analysis, and at that point, CQ base. Awesome. So right now, we have decrypted successfully the database. Let's go to analysis. There is a new database that appeared, bang, bang, double clip. I don't know, Windows user account, we can check. Doesn't allow me. Maybe master password. Absolutely. Secure. That's what we do within our tool. And let's see if we have access to people's passwords. So this is KeePass working in the cooperation of the operating system account. You need to just be careful who has access to this data, yes? OK, next stage. I was saying that we're going to play with the secure connection. So this is the RDG file. RDG file represents us the remote desktop connections. So if you have some servers with the username and password saved in this profile, then question is, are you still able to get access to this data? Absolutely. For that, we need, of course, the master key. Yes? And let me clear the screen right now. And then we've got a tool, another one, which is called CQRDCMAN Decryptor. And that tool allows us to take a file, very simple, and to specify the master key. So long story short, we've got our file, which is in file, which is in C, analysis. And we've got our secure connections RDG, master, punk. And this is one of the profiles saved within the remote desktop manager. So how this data is saved? It's all thanks to data protection API, and it relies either on the private key that is within the domain controller's data or your password, because master keys are encrypted with two of those. Clear? Awesome. OK, let's move forward. So the next stage that we've got that is quite important is IIS and how it works within the IIS, IIS structure. So this is like, I'm not very good at painting pictures. Hopefully this will be a good explanation. We've got IIS architecture. IIS consists of actually one file, which is SVC host, which is the blue one, which is divided into two parts, World Wide Web Publishing Service and Windows Process Activation Service. Windows Process Activation Service is the one that loads the configuration data. So application host config. If there is some password stored in application host config, for example, to application pool identity, this is something that we are able to grab. And this is something that we are able to read. So if the worker process starts, it needs to have all the necessary data about how to connect to the database, etc. So if the process can be started by Windows Process Activation Service, so worker process, that means that Windows Process Activation Service needs to know the password. Windows Process Activation Service runs as a local system. And what is interesting out here is that if some cryptography relies on secrets Just be careful when we say it. If some cryptography relies on the secrets that are processed by the local system, it means that not only you have an access to it online when you are administrator and when you can elevate to the local system, but you can also have it offline when you just take the disk of the server. Question is, can I get to access to all of these secrets managed by LSA, local security authority or local system? Answer is yes, that's the whole point. It's a different type of cryptography this time, not data protection API, but the one that relies on the machine itself, on the machine key, on the cryptography of the local system. So right now, what we will be able to do, and that's a question to us, are we able to get access to the passwords stored within the IIS? Absolutely. Let's have a look. So this is our next demo. So we're going to do it on the Windows Server 2016, since that's the one that is up to date right now, and so on. And the question is how it works within the IIS. The first simple demo, okay, just to set up the all the things clear. We've got here application pool, and that application pool, it's running on Freddy's account. If it's running on Freddy's account, it means that worker process can start as Freddy. That also means that if the domain controller is not available, will we be using cache logons? That's a different mechanism. We are using of what is saved in the application host config file. Don't call it cache credentials. It's not the same mechanism. It's a different one. Yeah, so let's find out how it works. If, of course, Windows process activation service running as a local system knows, why don't we ask Windows process activation service, hey, buddy, since you know how to start this guy as Freddy Krueger, why don't you give me the password? Because you know. And I can always do that when I'm the local administrator of the machine. This is also, as we already said, a cryptography that relies on the machine keys. So very simple case, I will show you this in a moment, where we are able to get access offline. So let's see. In order to be able to get access to the password, I need to go to Windows, System 32, INET SRV, and use the tool that I think was really brought from hell to earth to make our lives miserable. That's appcmd. Let's list app pool. The reason why I'm saying it is because it's not a very user-friendly tool, or the one that is the most unfriendly that I know. Okay, appcmd, list app pool. And our application pool is called www.acme.net/text:*, enter, and that's what we're going to see over here, because we're asking over here Windows Process Activation Service, it's the password given in the clear text for the application pool identity. Okay? So if this guy knows, why don't we just ask this guy? So screw the old tools. We don't want to play with this. Just ask. It's the simplest one. Well, in IIS, sometimes it might be even harder, and this is particularly interesting when we have a look at the different method used within the IIS to play with the encryption keys. So this is the script that, by the way, I will be sharing on my blog. So if you want to get access to it, you just need to enter it. What we're going to be doing here, first of all, I need to get access to the test.xml. What is the test.xml? Test.xml we're going to create. So let's do it. And at that certain stage, test.xml is going to contain IIS's private keys, so the ones that IIS uses for encryption. If I'm able to get access to that, that's very easy case to proceed forward. The folder, though, that I'm going to be entering, it's kind of creepy because it's a C, Microsoft.NET, Framework 64, number 4. This is the place. Now, ASP.NET, rec IIS, and the command is as follows, -px. I need to specify the name of the container, so it's a kind of like a variable where IIS stores its key, which is IIS was key. And then I need to specify where I would like to store this key. So here it's going to be ignite test.xml -pri to extract the private keys of the IIS. Bang, succeeded, life is full of success, notepad, and test XML looks like this. Very simple, it just contains the RSA data. Yeah, so not a difficult case. Okay, guys, so when we get into our PowerShell, we are ready to go. Question is, where do we extract the passwords from? Well, there is in IIS another solution, which is when we go to the main server area, centralized certificates, and then we PC these certificates. This is the centralized SSL support that provides multiple certificates for HTTPS websites. And if we go to edit feature settings, that's the place where we've got all the credentials. Yeah, this is it. So we are able to get access to such. So let's dig in. And where that is? This is actually stored in the registry in the encrypted form by using RSA algorithm. So who cares, really, if we're able to implement it this way? So here, system security, cryptography, RSA, crypto service provider, we provide the key. Yes, this is an XML string, so we've got that. We read this value from the registry. This is kind of interesting. Sometimes we need to, the data is stored from right to left or from left to right, or little endian or big endian. So this is always a very nice surprise sometimes. But we need to reverse the way how we read it. And the next thing is just that we need to decrypt it. So let's run the whole thing. And at the very end, what do we get? It's the password stored within the registry, decrypted by our RSA provider. Since we get access to the keys, this is all possible. OK, guys, so we've got that. Now, question is, what about services? Services is quite an easy subject because within the services, I was already talking about this many times within the past Ignite certificates. This year, we have launched a new tool, which is called CQ Secrets Dumper. And that's the tool that allows you to decrypt the service account's passwords, but offline. Offline meaning if you got access to the drive, you can just take a bunch of registry hives, yes, and then we are able to get access to those passwords. Let's have a look how this process looks like. Basically, services and service accounts passwords are part of the LSA, so local system secrets. Remember what we were saying, when something relies on the local system cryptography, we're able to extract the password of it offline. And that's what I would like to show you, okay? So long story short, we're gonna get into another machine and work on that. So we've got our machine is over here. Perfect. So what do we need to get? At that certain stage, we need to grab some security and system. And whenever we've got some security and system, we are able to move forward. Now, what I would like to show you very quickly, because I have already files gathered, how to gather the files. On the Windows, we've got two ways to do it. Either you use shadow copy, and we're creating the shadow copy, and from shadow copy, we're extracting the registry hives that we need in order to get access to passwords. Or we use the TSK sloth kit that allows us to scratch data directly from the drive. Okay? How do we do that? And obviously, as you can guess, I will pick the much harder way. Yes? Let's know this so that the other ones will be just a piece of cake for us. So, first of all, what is important for us is the place where the files are. And this, for this, you need the local administrative privileges, because in order to read something that is called inodes, so identifier of the file on the disk, you need to be an administrator, yes? This is a tool that we wrote, CQTSK file info. Since in Windows, it's not very easy to get access to the inode information. So here, I will need to specify Windows system 32 config sum. Where is sum? So sum is in inode number 41899. So this is the place. So what can we do out of that? Well, first of all, and TSK, it's not the most easy toolkit we could actually imagine. What we need to get is the tool, let's go to bin, which is called MMLS. And this is a tool that allows us to read information about our drive. Since we're going to be scratching everything from our drive, we need to know what's the structure of it so that we don't care about all this software that prevents us access to the files. We don't care about the permissions to the files. What we go raw. So let's move forward. Physical drive, zero, very good. And this is the information that we've got about the drive. Here we've got the basic data partition, start, and this is the place where all data on my Windows partition start. The next stage is equally straightforward. We will do I stat, and we will specify minus O, so from the following offset, on my physical drive, like this, physical drive 0, and then we will refer to the to this I node that we had here before. So in our case, let me do mark, for some, for example, database, this is the place where we will be able to, read the data from. So show me on this drive information about this file. This was the command. Now, I can see that data, it's within the offset 128-3. That means that I need to go there to extract it. Very straightforward, yes? So we do the same for some security system, depends on what you want. I will do it only for some, because the rest will be just repeating myself. So instead of istat this time to copy the data out, I will do icat like this and copy the data 28-3 and I will stream it to C, stream it to C analysis sum, because this is exactly our sum database. The file is copied out. Now question is it consistent? What kind of information we are able to pull out from the registry when we've got to it an offline access? Let's have a look. I will go to our analysis, start dot. Let's open analysis folder. I got here backup, where I have also system and security. We can do it exactly in the same way. So just forgive me doing this three times. It doesn't make sense. So we've got some security and system. And based on this data, we're going to work in a second. So what's the story? Maybe I should be back to tools. The story is like this. First tool that I would like to show you, it's the CQ Secrets Dumper, which allows us to extract secrets from the service account offline. In this particular operating system, services, I got a service that it's called Secure Hacks, and it runs again on the Freddy's account. Yeah, so Freddy Krueger. So I will try to extract password from the registry of Freddy Krueger. Let's do it. So we've got CQ Secrets Dumper, service, CQ Hacks, Secure Hacks. And then we're going to specify a couple of things. One more thing. I want to show you this. Secrets Dumper, yes. For basically, for services, yes. So we've got SEC or SIS, yes, to enable offline analysis. And this is what we need to provide. Some it's not necessary for now. So SEC and SIS are the ones that we need. OK, so we've got this one. Then we do SEC, which is in C analysis security. And then SIS, which is in C analysis system. And long story short, what we are able to grab is the offline password for the service account by just having an access to these two registry hives. What about hashes, local hashes? Same story, guys. It's very simple, yes? But for that, we're going to use CQ Hashdump version 2. And we need to specify here system hive. That's the only one that we need, yes? So we can specify that. Let's do this. Sum dump, yes? And then, of course, sum C analysis sum, and then sys C analysis system, enter. And we are able to extract the hashes. See, everything that is relying on the, boot key, that's the first thing. Second, local security authority subsystem cryptography, we're able to pull out like this. Okay, guys, so long story short, just to summarize, this is the way how we're able to extract credentials from the service accounts, from the hash, from the SAM database. The same works for ntds.dit in exactly the same way. From IIS, doesn't matter if we are talking about application pool secrets or if we are talking about, at that stage, the secrets that were stored within the centralized SSL certificate support solution. This is all relying on the local system's security and local system cryptography, where the password of the local system account is stored in the registry, being decryptable if we get an access to the boot key. A boot key, as we already know, is spread across the registry, and we just need to have access to the system hive. That's it, not a very big deal. So now let me bring something exciting. And I'm absolutely excited about this, no kidding, because literally yesterday, there was a new version of Mimikatz announced. As you see, absolutely new one with the new features, thanks to the everlasting and lasting for the past couple of years cooperation of Benjamin. So if you are interested, go ahead and use the new features. One of the new features and the new tools that are provided out there, it's the tool that is called Kakao. And the Kakao tool allows us for something that I would like to talk about today. Don't get me wrong, I'm really excited. The previous stuff was a kind of normal stuff that I do, but this is the first time we are talking about it. This is the premiere of the tool. So I feel this little butterflies in my belly. Let's move on, okay? Probably if you get closer, you're gonna see that I'm kind of red right now. Okay, let's dig in. So two amazing discoveries. Why? Because we've been working for it for a hell of a long time. And basically, there are two things that I would like to announce. First of all, the Kerberos pre-authentication issue, which allows you to log on to the operating system. First with the smart card, but when you enforce the smart card, you can still log on without the smart card. That's my point, in a short words. Yes, let me explain it further when I will be talking about the demonstration. Second thing, it's our tool. It's kind of crazy about data protection API, classic, and the new generation, so the new one, we are like having our whiteboard in the office written down in a lot of geeky stuff related to this. It's a subject that everybody is hunting for in the security world, but we made here two discoveries that we are really proud of. One of those is that if you are managing PFX files, PFX, it's a horrible file, yes? It is a container of the private key, but did you ever had a situation when you've got a PFX file and you've forgotten a password to it? This is horrible, I hate this. So why don't we have a different solution? So Microsoft introduced the SIT-protected PFX files, which relies on who you are. We kind of little broke it, yes? So that's what I would like to talk about. And of course, about the mitigation, because otherwise it will be not really fair. Okay, first, Kerberos pre-authentication. Let's dig in. So what's the story? The story is like this. There is like this little user. And this user, it's like a normal situation. What he does, have a look, he logs on with the smart card, security device. So this is what his corporation told him to do so. And this is a normal story. He just comes every day, uses a smart card, logs on, and so on. But because in this company, there were like different kinds of situations happening about people being fired and so on, the user was like proactive. He wants to like be able to get access to his data, even though something wrong is going to happen to him. So putting this in nice words, yes, when a user is going to be fired, he still wants to have access to his data. Even if the smart card logon is the one that he's using, his smart card has been taken away from him, user is like, I don't care. I got the thing. The thing, this is what we're going to be talking about, OK? So putting it in nice words, user is a very smart user, and he wants to be ready in case of the emergency when his smart card is going to be lost. Yes, and he doesn't have an access to the data. He still wants to do not trouble an administrator and wants to access to the data, OK? So let's dig in. So what do we have over here? Well, that's a Freddy logging on with a smart card. Does Freddy have access to the domain data? Sure, let's dig in. Punk, let's get into, for example, domain controller, bring it on. Yes, he has, no problem. So what we're going to do at that stage is that Freddy will pre-generate for himself the Kerberos pre-authentication requests, and this is something that protocol allows for. So one thing is that he will be able to pre-generate for himself the request to get access to domain for future. I want to get access to this domain in 10 days. Can I do it? Sure. That's what we're going to pre-generate. This is a kind of like a magic pre-ticket. Protocol itself allows for that. What is the worst thing, and this is the problem that we are talking about right now, is that nobody at the moment of usage verifies if you've got the possibility to generate this pre-request. So if you have already pre-generated it, you're done. It's fine. Nobody will verify anything further. That's the problem. have a look. So first of all, what I will do, I will run our edition of PKI NIT Mustiness, NIT Mustiness. That's like a little tool where you are able to generate for yourself, I will just change the offset because it's kind of like too big, generate for yourself these requests, okay? This is the setup, let's do it. I have a bunch of musty keys. These are the ones that will allow me to get access to the domain father. Let's see if this is what happens. Now, user wants to secure himself, so he wants to take these keys and copy them to his own machine, Windows 8 client over here, where we will put this in this folder. Let's see, because it's kind of strange. I kind of like cannot copy it. Let me see. Okay, let me try to do it differently. I will authenticate by the 250 slash Kiwi, like this. Oh, it looks like it doesn't have an access to the network. That's strange. Okay, anyway, let me move it differently. So user will move it to his machine. And this machine, Windows 8 over here, yes, that's the machine where the user is logged on as a local user. It's absolutely not related user, yes? So I will go here to Kiwi Secure Edition, dear. And as you see, it's all empty. What I will do in the backstage, I will copy the data from the user's computer, because user, as we already mentioned, he wants to secure himself into his private desktop, yes? So that's gonna be the scenario. Okay, so let's dig in. So I will just use another machine because apparently something went wrong over the network. It's the machine that is not connected to the domain. That's the whole story. Just a little case. Let me check, because we are right now, just a little verification, ipconfig. 43, I am on the 43 right now. Mm-hmm, we got this. I need to go to users. I need to go to Freddy Krueger over here, and I need to go to his desktop for our tools demos. And I've got this Keko. These are my tickets that I've got over here, and these are the ones that I will just do Control C, and I will copy them to the different machine, yes? Okay, so long story short, what will happen is that if the user is capable, well, to move this to his local desktop, and he is, obviously, let's do it, then user should be able to submit them for the domain logon. Let's be back to his local desktop here. So this is good. Now, question is, am I able from this machine to access the domain data? Yes, so over here, I'm not. As you see, clear thing. I'm here logged on as a local user. Very good. So over here, if I do dir, I do go to Kakao, and I do dir. These are our copied right now. This is the 658. So I just copied these tickets over here to be able to get access to the domain. Now, what I will do, I'm going to take one of these tickets. Let me get to this folder. So Kiwi Kakao. And I'm going to take one of these tickets. For example, let me check, double check. This is this one, correct? Rename Control C. And I'm going to submit them into my current session. So long story short, we will do here as rec. We're going to specify this request.musty, PTT. And we see that ticket has been successfully submitted for our current session. Now let's have a look if we can still do not access to the domain. And I can. You see the problem? Okay. Thank you. So what just happened is that we are able to log on to the domain by having only Kerberos, like a little file, which is our pre-authentication request to get access to the domain, even if the user's smart card has been taken out. User was logging on with a smart card. Smart card was taken away. Who cares if the user pre-generated a Kerberos authentication request? And at the moment they were generated, they were signed by the private key on the smart card. Okay? The subject is close. Then user takes them, and user can use them anywhere, because the protocol itself does not verify if you got the possibility to generate the pre-request at the moment you use it. Generation and usage are two different stages. I hope that this is clear. Now, right now, this is not patched. Microsoft is working on it. There has been an additional draft on the top of an RFC that describes the Kerberos pre-authentication that tells what's supposed to be done. So if you will like to have more information, we are posting a lot of information about our blog about that, okay? So now your users, remember, they have the possibility to log on to your domain anytime. I did not use here at any stage a local administrator privileges. The only person I was here, it's a user. User being a user can do this for himself. Well, he can log on with the smart card to the domain. So that's kind of logical, right? OK, guys, smoke it. So now, next one, which is data protection API new generation. This is my uber cool favorite subject. And basically, this is where the whole party starts, really. Because what is the problem, as we already mentioned, is that when we've got the PFX files, these PFX files, they have a problem because in order to manage passwords, you need to either have to write it down somewhere, have some password manager to those PFXs. It's a little bit of a troublesome. As I already briefly mentioned, but now let's get into the details, Microsoft introduced a solution that allows us to realize the security of the PFX file on ourselves, on our SID. So that's why it's called SID-protected PFX files. So we are wondering, if they are SID-protected, is there a way we're able to break it? What really takes part in the whole cryptography within the PFX file, which is such a simple format, by the way, so that we are or we are not able to unprotect it? Okay, first of all, when we are thinking, of course, about that, let's dig in into the situation where the user will be requesting, having a certificate and eventually having it extracted, exported with the private key. We can close that down. We don't need it anymore. That applies to all of the systems, of course, also Windows 10, 2016, and so on, because the solution itself was introduced in Windows Server 2012 R2. So cert MGR, that's what we need. So little demonstration. Well, actually, I don't want to be like administrator here. Sign out. Get out. I want a Freddy. Freddy is a cool guy. OK. Maybe I should just regret it for now because I will not be able to get access to the machine. But okay, thank you. So we've got our Freddy. Lovely. That's Freddy. Okay. So what are we going to be doing here? We've got our certificates over here. And I got here a certificate which has private key available. That's this one. Good. So what I will do, I'm going to take it, all tasks, and then normal stuff. Yes, extract, export. Yes, I want to export the private key. Absolutely, because I want a PFX. Yes, PFX needs to be SID protected. Next. Yes, next. We all know this wizard. Now, normally what we will do, we're going to put the password in here, right? But I want to put here a group or username. That's the SID protected feature. It's kind of cool. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. But I want to show you about and show you the back side of it, OK? So we've got this group or usernames. And Freddy Krueger itself is allowed to get access to the certificate. But I would like, let's say, my friend Bruce Lee get access to this. Lee, that's the guy. So these two will be able to open this PFX. That's nice for the server admins, for developers, to share the same files so that they don't have to remember the password. It's actually very cool. But let's have a look. Next, file name, I will just save it on the desktop maybe, and I'm going to save it for Bruce. Yeah, so I'm supposed to give this file to Bruce so that Bruce can open it on his computer. Export was successful. Good, guys. So now let's have a look how it works. If we open this file, we go next, next. Am I just able to, what, display a password? Have a look. Really? Is there a password on it? I thought it's SID protected. because it kind of is, it's protected, but the PFX itself is, in this case, protected with the password. That password, it's being decrypted based on who you are. We are getting to the domain. This is then, there is an RPC call made to Active Directory, and based on who you are, there is a KDS root key gathered from the domain, and that's the key that is used to generate the key, that is used to generate the key, that is decrypting your password, that is decrypting your private key. Make sense? This was easy. Two keys to decrypt your passwords, to decrypt your private key, generated from Active Directory based on what is in the KDS data. Okay? This is something, this is our discovery, so I'm really excited to talk about this. Have a look. So this is actually a password. Now, question is, okay, this is all great. Can we get access to this? Absolutely. What we need to get access to is, at that stage, domain controller data. Because KDS, so the Kerberos Distribution Service, is the guy that stores the different types of keys that we can use to decrypt different data or to generate data. For example, KDS is also used in generation of the GMSAs, Group Managed Service Accounts passwords. Yes, it's a quite an important guy. So what we're going to be doing here, we're going to be using the PowerShell in order to extract data from the ntds.dit to be able to decrypt that PFX. Okay? How are we going to do that? Well, first of all, we need to create a shadow copy. So VSS admin in order to get ntds.dit. Admin, create, shadow, and it's going to be 4 equals C colon, and I need this shadow. Very good. So this is this shadow path that I've got. Okay. So I'm going to be copying to the C analysis folder, paste, all the stuff from Windows, system, not the system 32, NTDS, of course. And I want all of those files. Yes? So they are all copied. So I have just copied NTDS. Now we're almost done. Let's get to PowerShell. I'm going to use, for now, the PowerShell command from the DS internals, yes, from the other developer, Michael Graftener, which we asked him to provide us a possibility to extract within the PowerShell the tool from the domain. Let's have a look how it works. So at that stage, I'm just going to run get addb kds root key, and I will specify the db path, and our db path, it's here, ntds.dit. But apparently, there is something wrong with it. This is all under control, by the way. Something might be wrong with it, so we will need to fix it. And for that, we've got esnutil/rdbnd. It's a quite quick command that will make our ntds.dit consistent. So let me get into it. I'm just going to paste it here. Bang, database is up and running. Yes, so right now, what I will just need to do is to do the last thing, which is to rerun within the PowerShell the command that I was using. So this was, let me copy it, it will be the fastest, because I kind of like, I cannot pull it out right now. Check and mark and copy. Lovely. We are back on track, paste, enter. And what it shows me is this little key. This is the key that I want. This is exactly the key that I want. And this is the key, enter, that I will, together with ntds.dit, copy to my folder on my local laptop in order to analyze, of course, the whole thing here. So for that, I will be trying to extract the password to get access to the PFX file on my local machine. So let me show this to you. KDS, I have here, this is my local drive, KDS, I will just open it. This is the place where I'm pasting this key. It needs to be, of course, in one line. So I'm going to save it like this. And I'm going to copy this in the moment. And another thing that I need from this folder over here, from the analysis, it's ntds.dit, that I will also put here in this analysis place. It takes a little while, but this should be all good. Now, at that stage, we're almost ready. Because what we're going to do, we will decrypt this data by using one of our newest tools. This is the data protection, here we go, CQ data protection API PFX decryptor. Let me get there. And over here, this tool takes two parameters. One is the, at that stage, not this one, sorry. Not this one, this one. This one is the easy one, the different one. Decryptor, no, this is the one. Yes, the PFX file, of course, that was encrypted. Sorry about the confusion, and the master key. So we need to also get from the user's perspective, from the user computer, that particular PFX. And that particular PFX was over here. This was this for Bruce. So let's copy it. And I'm going to put it also in the analysis here, not ntds.did, but I want certificate. Ah, because of the Encans session, I will need to relog on again as Freddy Krueger. OK, good. We're almost done. Copy, lovely, and paste it. Perfect. This is perfect. So we are back on track, and we've got our PFX, which is in a C analysis. And then we've got for Bruce. And another one is a master. And that's the master key that we've got from the domain that we are able to copy. So Control A, Control C, perfect, bang. This is the password that we use to get access to this PFX file. Now, let's have a look. If I try to open for Bruce on a separate machine, absolutely different, I cannot get access to it. But if I take this password and I just decrypt it and I paste it here, I'm able to import it. That's the story, OK? Bunch of credential security takeaways, guys. First of all, two conclusions. A, obviously, we need to know how our credentials work. Couple of important announcements. One thing is that you need to know your people, who is having access to the domain controller's data, because it might not necessarily be domain admin. Domain admin might be also a person that is kind of not trustworthy. Do we trust them? So who has access to the domain controller's data? Who has access to the backups? Because backup people can do exactly every single thing that I showed you. And at the very, very end, we need to practice with finding out how and where our passwords data is saved. Because passwords, as we already mentioned, they're all saved within the four kind of default mechanisms. Don't forget the data protection API is as safe as your password is. Yes, and as your domain admin is. So this is something that we need to take on the top of that. Now, there is, of course, more information on the top of everything. There are algorithms to be more familiar with. Yes, if you are interested in what I did, all the tools that I've been speaking about within this presentation, you can find on my blog. And this is secureacademy.com/blog. If you want to get some updates, you can, of course, get access to the newsletter. Or you can sign up to everything if you like what you saw. I'm always providing the data like this. And you can find a lot of research also over there. One more important announcement, since we do all the hacking and we partnered with Beyond Trust, today on Thursday, so today at 2:30 p.m. at the Beyond Trust booth, you can pick up the ticket to win a laptop with the secure hacking tools. We've got tens of them. If you're interested, that's the way. Also, we're going to be drawing the toolkits. Also, we're going to be drawing the t-shirts with the raccoon that is passing the hash. Don't go with this t-shirt into the Arab countries because you're going to be in troubles. Last but not least, of course, if you liked what you saw and you want like a little bit a quicker path, today we are launching the online application for our online training. This is something that you can sign up for until the end of the Microsoft Ignite. We promote an early bird for everybody that is at Ignite. You don't have to apply like right now. It's just enough that you sign up. And then this is how you can lock your early, but it's a 6 weeks online program that we start in November. A lot of geekiness, a lot of tools, and it's not only run by me, but by also much, much cuter, our whole secure team. So hopefully, don't forget secureacademy.com/advanced2017. That's the place to go, and looking forward to see you on my next session today. Yes, thank you so much, guys.